Welcome back to Animosity. We watch shows, so you don't have to. We are finally back with the Owl House because other topics have just been more interesting. I don't know. We don't have reasons. I'm here with Baron.
That's me.
Apparently. So, yeah, today we're talking. We have three episodes of Owl House to catch up on. We have Elsewhere and Elsewhen, Any Sport in a Storm, and Reaching Out. Today we're just going to be focusing on Elsewhere and Elsewhen. We'll probably do Any Sport in a Storm and Reaching Out next time, and then we should be back on track.
Right.
Yes.
So let's start with Elsewhere and Elsewhen. Everyone's favorite witch Lilith has returned to our screens.
Cannon Arrowace. We're probably never going to mention that, so I did. I don't know where that was canon confirmed, but apparently it was.
And so the episode sort of starts. They're throwing a party for Lilith, and we sort of understand what Lilith's situation is following essentially her getting fired after the end of the season one finale. So she's taken another job regarding some historical position, except we learn pretty quickly that compared to others in her field, she is sorely lacking. And she has been shown up by her mentor of sorts, a very thinly Dora the Explorer reference.
Yeah, like Dora the Explorer took a little too much meth.
Mm-hmm. It starts then when Luz is looking for any more information on Philip Widdebane, since she's pretty much reached the end of whatever she can learn from the journal. So she starts working with Lilith to look for another way into this, which leads to Luz learning about an in-universe legend of sort regarding static time pools and a region of the ground that leads to previous points in time, but in universe it's outright stated that said time pools are just that, legends, and they're not even known to truly exist. But Ida does offhandedly mention that when they were much younger, she and Lilith would eagerly look for them, indicating that this is something that they've known about for quite a while.
Yeah.
But then it's shown that with the remaining Titan blood that Luz still has on Amity, they're able to construct a way to locate one of these time pools to go looking for a way to Philip's time period. And onto the B plot, Ida is once again visited by her mother, Gwendolyn Clawthorne, and Ida is informed of something that shocks and terrifies her, that her father has returned back into her life.
Mm-hmm.
And if we know anything about Ida's past with her previous struggle with the Owl Beast, it was shown to us via flashback in Knocking on Hootie's Door, that because when she was younger, because she couldn't keep the Owl Beast under control, she grievously wounded her father.
Yeah.
And that she hasn't seen him in many years. And she's sort of not emotionally ready to see him again, because she believes she doesn't deserve any sort of her this for what she's done.
Yeah.
But back onto the A plot. So after constructing their locator, Luce and Lilith go off looking for the time pools. And they eventually stumble upon it, and they realize precisely why the time pools were never found before. Specifically that they were buried underneath a sandy bank, and such is why it was never previously found. So after some trial and error, they are able to find a portal to the precise time period in which they're looking for. And after making some impromptu disguises for themselves, they are able to travel into the past.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing that we learn is, wouldn't you know it, all of Belus's talk about how the quote-unquote savage days filled with wild magic was actually just that, all talk. In reality, when they travel back to that time period, they find that despite wild magic being the default form of magic used, everything seems very peaceful. People are friendly, civilized, and absolutely, definitely not savage.
Because of course they are. Like, let's face it, we all knew Belus was full of shit. Like, come on.
Yeah, anyone who's read any kind of dystopian novel knows that anytime an emperor starts talking about history, you know it's just pure propaganda.
Oh, absolutely.
And so after making their way a bit through this time period, they find a man being tormented by some guys who they claim is responsible for the disappearance of their brother. And of course, Luce steps in to defend this guy because of course she will.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when we discover that this person that they've stumbled upon is the Philip Widdivane they've been looking for, transported to the Boiling Isles. But of course they're staying low key, so Philip doesn't pick up on the fact that Luce is a human as well.
Yeah.
And sort of like our first immediate clue that Philip isn't who he previously made himself out to be is that his physical appearance is way different than what we saw, at least in the projections from his diary. He's unlike the sort of illustrations from his diary, he's looking pretty ragged, and he's got a full beard, not clean shaven as his diary basically portrayed him as being.
Yeah.
And so we learn pretty quickly from Widdivane that he's been looking for a person or entity or someone known only as the collector, someone whose name Luce and Lilith have already found out about. Now, eagle-eyed viewers will know that the collector made their debut in one of the flashbacks in Knock Knock Knockin' on Hootie's Door. If you stuck around to read the credits, the collector is the strange hooded figure dotted with stars.
Really?
And is and due to the imagery in Hootie's Door, it's heavily implied that the actor is responsible for sealing the owl beast into the form of a curse, which was then implanted by Lilith into Ida. So at this point, indirectly speaking, this collector that they're looking for has been responsible for one of the bigger plot points in the show. And now that it's been said that apparently not only has this collector been around since Philip Widdebane's time, but this collector is significant enough that in said time he knows about this collector and is actively looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the B plot in the present day. Ida, in her great emotional maturity, is doing pretty much everything she can to avoid seeing her father, despite King, who has taken on a surprisingly level-headed tone for this episode. He is excited to see the man that he considers to be his grandfather, and both he and Gwen are really quite dismayed on Ida's extreme refusal to see him again.
Yeah,
and this part sort of really emphasized that even though she hasn't been great at showing it, Ida still has extreme guilt over the people that she hurt and or pushed away when she struggled against the owl beast curse. So like we saw that a little bit in Follies at the Covenday Parade, where Rain, in the altered state of mind, didn't even remember Ida's attempts to free them. And now we're seeing that Ida is still over to what she believes she did to her father. It was really quite a heartbreaking thing to see.
Yeah.
And back to the A plot. So now Luce and Lilith are now following Philip, and of course Luce and Philip are conversing about how they found out about the glyphs, or as Widdebane so calls them, pictoglyphs. and how both of them have come to the conclusion that the glyphs and magic in general are, quote, gifts from the Titan.
Mm-hmm.
But Philip himself makes a sort of offhand statement about how it seems that the Titan was deliberately hiding this from him, versus how with Luce, all of the glyphs that she found came to her very easily in terms of how the world presented them to her. So we've already got two discrepancies with Philip as presented in his diary versus Philip as he is or was, I guess. And so as they're walking to where they believe they will find a path to the collector, we can notice very quickly that Lilith is starting to look a bit uneasy about what they're doing. And as they're walking, Philip seems to pick up on this and just out of absolutely nowhere comments Lilith on how, quote, her meat being loose, uh, see, is very talented, and this out of nowhere compliment seems to snap Lilith out of whatever unease she was previously in. And upon reaching Widabane's place of living, we find out pretty quickly that he's been doing a lot of sort of his own independent research on his glyph, his glyphs, and he demonstrates pretty quickly how he's sort of developed what can only be described at this point in the show, the mother of all glyphs.
Oh yeah, it is a humongous
and an extremely complex pattern of combined glyphs that apparently, when activated, teleports the user and several others a pretty long distance.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is unlike anything we've seen Lou's been able to make before regarding the combination glyphs. So previously, combination glyphs, she was only able to do stuff like turn invisible. But now we're seeing him essentially using a huge combination of glyphs to achieve long range teleportation. Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing that at the very least, he is as learned as his diary has implied him to be. And so after this long range teleport, it puts them on the path to finding where the collector is. And they chart a path to the head or skull of the Titan.
Yeah.
Then cutting back to the B plot. Ida gets the, in big air quotes, ingenious idea to disguise herself as Lilith in order to evade her father. And of course, the disguise itself is paper thin.
Oh yeah,
Ida doesn't even make any significant attempt to disguise her voice.
Yeah,
even Gwendolyn sort of lampshades how poor of a disguise it was, and she even asks point blank to King, "Does she really expect me to fall for that?" And King, the sympathizer, just says, "Just let her have this one."
Yeah, I mean,
As Ida tries to make her swift exit from the Owl House, she happens to run into the very man she's been avoiding the entire time,
mm-hmm.
her father. And it's at this point. He tries to reconnect with her, but in her extremely, extremely long-standing guilt, he claims that she just isn't worthy of any forgiveness that he can give her.
Yeah.
And then when her father, Del Clawthorne, turns around, we really see the extent of the injuries he incurred. He's lost one of his eyes, and he has significant scarring on the left side of his head.
Yeah.
And then another detail is that when he turns around, we see his palisman, which eagle-eyed viewers will notice it looks like a yellow version of Hunter's palisman, the Red Cardinal Flapjack.
Yeah.
And this is like a small visual detail that may or may not become important at a later point. But after a little bit of pushing, Ida does does agree to have a real heart to heart with her father, and her father reveals what their sort of their family trade was, and that is in carving talismans. And of course, like, one of the first thing Del says is, I understand that I have a grandson now. And so from there, Ida and her father are truly able to have a heart to heart. And then back to the A plot. Widdebane leads Luce and Lilith into a cave inside the skull of the Titan. And as they make it into this dungeon or tomb looking area, Lilith really makes known her true unease with Philip, that he exudes a very uncomfortably familiar aura about him, specifically with him telling her essentially pretty much everything that she wants to hear without any sort of sincerity behind it.
Yeah.
And so it is at this point then Philip leads Luce and Lilith to a door that is locked via some sort of puzzle mechanism, and that he's apparently been trying to get past this mechanism for a long time, but has so far not been able to succeed. And of course, Luce, she and Lilith are able to solve this puzzle door pretty quickly, and are able to get it open, but then once the moment they get the door open, Luce notices a strange occurrence with Widdebane as she sees him writing in his journal at that time, writing that he was unable to save the two, even though he's writing that in real time. He's writing that at the moment they just got the door open, and Luce really, and this is at the point where Luce really notices something is extremely wrong, and she sort of drops the primary question of why did Widdebane lead them there, and in a shockingly cold manner, he replies very calmly, as a sacrifice.
Yeah.
And the moment after he says that, Lilith, in an almost sort of excited state, says, "What did he say?" And the very next instant, Lilith gets grabbed by a monster. Mm-hmm. And it's at this point Luce fully realizes that Widdebane is not the man that he presented himself to be in his journal, and that based on what she saw, it's implied that most, if not all, of what he wrote about himself in that diary is potentially either misleading or outright fabricated.
Yeah.
And so at that point. Widdebane is able to find what he was looking for in connection with the collector, what appears to be some sort of round glass mirror. And once he gets that, he dips and leaves Luce and Lilith to their deaths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But of course, through their previous experimentation with the time travel, they know the exact method of pacifying the beast that Philip has locked them in with. And once they're able to do that, they're able to escape the cave that he locked them into. And they make a pretty big they make a pretty big confrontation with him about how he lied to them, which ends up culminating with, in an awesome moment, Lilith punching him in the face.
Oh, it was legendary.
Absolutely legendary. And so once that happens, we can see Philip is going through his full villainous breakdown, and at this point, Luce and Lilith decide that it's not really worth it anymore to keep hanging around in this time period with this guy. So they decide to take their leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so as they return to the present day, Luce is pretty bummed because of the classical never meet your heroes storyline.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately for them, in universe, their sort of search for more information on how to get back to the human realm has unfortunately come up empty for them.
Yeah.
But at least for the B plot, Ida was able to get closure with her father, and to the point where her father even gave her another log of palistrum wood for the creation of a new palisman, implied to be one that will be made for Luce.
Doesn't Luce already have a... In Hunting Palisman, didn't Luce already get a piece
this
of
did, wood? This did already happen, so this... So either... So... What this could imply is, and since they haven't made any egregious continuity errors up to this point, it could imply that since at this time now they have enough of the material to make two distinct talismans, that is probably what's going to happen. Since, like I said, so far the writing has been pretty good with not making any errors in continuity.
Yeah.
But then as the episode comes to its end, we get probably the most important revelation of the episode. We flash back to Philip's time period, and we see him going on a pretty angry rant about witches and how they disgust him. And so we see him slinking back into his sort of cave of residence. And he pulls up the sleeve on his right arm, and we see a very menacing thing. He has apparently tattooed a number of the glyphs into his arm, and at that very moment, his arm starts grotesquely bulging and pulsating, and it's a pretty wretched thing to see. And then we see the real wham of the episode.
Yeah.
He, at the back of his cave, has a bunch of palismans stored up. He breaks one of them open and inhales a sort of green smoke out of it, which is the exact same thing we saw Emperor Belos do in the present day.
Mm-hmm.
So we have our identity of Belos now. Belos is not, in fact, a native witch to the Boiling Isles. He is, in fact, the lost human Philip Widdebane.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I think mainly they were, the main theory is that they were like known to be each other. The silhouettes of Philibane and Belos are just too different for them to be the same person.
That's fair, but it could be just either a red herring or just a little animation goof. But oh well. But then the kicker, the final thing we see before the episode ends, is the circular glass lens that Philip has collected now projects the image of a smiling sun and moon face onto the wall. And this will apparently be the thing that leads him to the collector And that's the last thing we see before the episode closes out.
Mm-hmm. It first of all, round of applause for Baron for talking for half an hour. I am very tired and not at my best, so can't give too much commentary. I'm sorry. But yeah, you killed it, dude.
Thank you.
I mean,
but then on. Oh, no, go on.
I'm just saying, like, my main reaction to this episode is, like, there's a lot of lore that gets dropped here about, I mean, Philibane being a dick, which I could have called a long time ago, but, like, you know, whatever. This was a forgettable episode for me. I mean, it's kind of it's kind of one of the ones that's just there. Like, it's, I don't know, I think I'm alone on that one. This is just not a big eventful episode for me. Definitely not anything compared to, like, Reaching Out was much bigger for me personally.
But that's a fair way to look at it, especially because of the aspect of a lot more was revealed to us, the audience, versus how much was revealed to the characters in universe.
Absolutely, yeah.
But still, the amount of new information we've gotten on the world and characters is pretty big. So we had seen in one of the previous episodes that Belos is afflicted by some kind of curse or condition that causes his body to wildly mutate into a pretty ragged, semi-fluid state. And we see exactly how he came to be that way, that for one reason or another, Philip has decided to tattoo the glyphs directly onto his body, and that's caused some pretty grave effects. Reasoning for doing such a thing is still not very clear, but at this point we know exactly the origin of Philip/Belus's affliction and him breaking open the palismans in order to keep his condition at bay. That's what solidified the connection.
Absolutely.
And moreover, on the collector, we sort of get this. It's known at this point that the collector has been around for a very long. Has been around for a very long time. So it's implied to us. It doesn't tell us the exact year, but it's implied to us that Widdebane got transported to the demon realm in at least the mid 1600s. So this would imply that both Belos and the collector have been around from this time into the 21st century. So the revelation that the collector as well has been around for hundreds of years sort of leans into more of the mystery of who precisely the collector is. And since it's already been established that there's a heavy connection between the origin of the curse of the owl beast and the collector, we know that via some action of the collector, it's pretty heavily implied that the owl beast was once its own creature that got forcibly transformed into a sort of purely metaphysical curse.
Yeah.
So clearly this collector is a being of great power, able to perform a feat such as that. And while we don't know exactly why Philip is searching for the collector, we know that whatever it is, uh, it is it is, from the details at this point, it may be plausible to assume that there is more of a connection between Philip slash Bellos and the Collector than we previously were assumed to believe. So this is sort of the point in the story of the joining of the two major running plots. So that's the plot of Bellos and the Day of Unity, and the other running plot of Ida's sort of ordeal with her curse.
Yeah.
And so this is the point where those two stories, this is like the implicit intersection point. And from this point on in the story, those two storylines are now very much closer to one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So also this particular episode has actually by itself a certain amount of rewatch value once you know what Wittebane's true nature is. At the beginning, when the two brothers are about to destroy his diary and they claim that he's responsible for their brother's disappearance, we learn that they weren't just jerk-ass bullies. They were totally justified in what they were doing to Wittebane, since it is implied that at this point he has led several people to their deaths in pursuit of a way to the Collector.
Yeah, that kind of deserved, honestly. Kind of deserved.
And later on, when he's leading Luce and Lilith, we see that as they're walking, Wittebane has a completely, an almost blank expression on his face as they're walking. And he's able to pick up on Lilith's uneasiness, feeds her a compliment in order to distract her, and then the moment that interaction is done, he goes back to his listless face.
Mind game master right there.
Right, so the reveal later on in the episode that when Lilith says that his presence is uncomfortably familiar, and of course with the implicit knowledge of exactly how the Emperor treats high-ranking members of the Emperor's coven, which we saw with both Kikimora and Hunter, we were able to know that in the hundreds of years he's been around, his methods for controlling people really haven't changed all that much.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so now the primary mysteries that are left from this episode are, what's the precise connection between Bellos and the Collector? What is the method of their longevity? And thirdly, we sort of learned that just from his interactions and even more implicitly from his background as a 16th century British colonist, he seems very keen on controlling magic, hence why present day Bellos has such a hatred for wild magic.
Yeah.
And so what this ended up being is that, in conclusion, lore-wise, this is probably one of the most significant episodes thus far.
I can definitely see that thus far. I mean, when you have other ones that have major sort of plot drops, it's like this one's very centered on this specific lore. It's centered on
Luce's journey to get home lore, whereas you have episodes like Knock 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 on Hoodie's Door that gives you drops in every place, every single right. lore form. So, which at that point, that episode can only be topped where we get a Lumity kiss, which I'm starting to think is never going to happen.
Eh, maybe someday.
No. Shut up.
It's already been established that Dana probably enjoys tormenting us, so...
Reverse masochism.
Mm-hmm. And so... So, yeah, that's basically all I have to say about this episode. Jackpot, if you want to add anything else?
My brain's effed right now. Yeah, my sleep schedule's been screwed over the past few days, and I've been slammed with work right before vacation, so... It's been a lot, but over the vacation, we will catch up on Owl House recordings, and I will have more energy, hopefully. So I will definitely be better.
So that'll present for better recordings in the future.
Absolutely, and Baron will not have to talk for 40 minutes straight.
All right, so yeah, I think that should be enough to bring this episode to a close, then, yes?
Yeah, I think I got nothing else to add.
All right, so to send you off, this has been Baron Cornelius Craik. This is the Animosity Podcast, and I wish you all a very good evening.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Now we're going to synchronize.
Oh, we're gonna try. Thank you guys so much for listening. See you guys in the next one. Bye. Bye.